you see, you have the you can't go by the name, because Clark generally is a Catholic name, but you have Clark and the other. McMahon is the same too. It's hard to go just by names.
There's some of the Cromwellian soldiers buried here. This is a very old church and graveyard.
This is a story that began for me with a newspaper my mother kept in the bottom of her wardrobe until she died. It was an Irish Independent from December the 10th, 1971. The main picture on the front page is captioned, "Mr. Fox and the Rubber Bullet That Stopped the Doyle."
Billy Fox was then TD for this, the Monaghan constituency. What he'd done was bring two rubber bullets and a CS gas canister into the Doyle chamber. He questioned the Fianna Fáil government's avowed republicanism. The canisters had been fired into the south by the British Army. Fox was forcibly removed from the Doyle that day, and he became, briefly, a national figure. He was then 32, charismatic and full of promise.
That story, on the surface at least, was to end in this place, Annamullan Church of Ireland graveyard.
And that's the family grave plot, himself and his parents and late uncle Thompson went in, were buried there within a space of perhaps 7 or 8 years.
Is the church used here now at all?
Oh, it is certainly, yes. It is a church of Ireland for this area. Oh, there would be service here, I understand, every Sunday.
Is it a big congregation?
No.
I'd imagine a couple of dozen. There isn't that many. See, you have Curlay, the church that you come down past, it's Presbyterian. You see, you have a number of Presbyterians in Church of Ireland within the parish.
And within the County Monaghan, Presbyterians would have much greater numbers than Church of Ireland.
That photograph was crucial to the story of Billy Fox. It was to alienate part of his core constituency, the Protestants of County Monaghan, and lose him his Doyle seat in the 1973 election. He was then elected Senator.
Senator Billy Fox departed this life on the 11th of March 1974, aged 35 years. He served every man with Christian devotion and died in holy innocence. "Let your light so shine before men," directed by his fellow countrymen.
Billy Fox was born and baptised into the Church of Ireland in Cortober in 1938. He was elected to the Doyle in 1969. He lost his Doyle seat in the 1973 election. He was subsequently elected to the Senate. He was the only member of the Oireachtas killed during the recent troubles. The words on his death certificate say, "Death due to murder." That was 1974.
But there's more to the life and death of any man than just the cold facts. I grew up during that time, and the facts don't tell you what it's like to have politics as a virus in your blood, or what it's like to drive a border road at the dead of night, your attention fixed in the rear view mirror.
There were a good few Protestants around this area when you were growing up then. Would there be, what percentage would you say?
It's hard to know. There'd probably be 10%.
10 to 15%, yeah.
Would. You see, in our townland, in the townland I was reared in, Corrigra, there was no Protestant name at all in it. Or none in the present townland that I'm living in. But then in the immediate round Aragoonie School, there's a number of Protestants. And then you have over at Shantana, a number of Protestants over that area. But I would say at the present time there's hardly 10% of the population.
Scarcely at all, at the present time. But the relationship between the both communities were always quite good in this area, no problems whatsoever. Person was taken just as we found, as they were found, and you know, there were never any sectarian problems in this parish.
Protestant farmers were bigger and better land area, I suppose, to it.
But not them all.
Not them all,
certainly
no.
Not them all.
Oh, not them all.
You see, growing up near the border then, you always felt as if something were about to happen. As if, like today, the sky were about to impact down on us at any moment.
He was a fine gay man, a brother of Tom Fitzpatrick. He said, when you go into this business, he says, you're like a badger in a barrel. Your job is to get out of the barrel and forget about everybody around you because you have to get elected. So be every man. There's more squabbles within the party with the people who are there than the opposition. It's not the lads. It's your own guys you have to watch. That just was him. He was just
game for a laugh.
He was a good looking man.
He was a
very fine speaker. There's no doubt at all about it.
See, I wasn't.
There was photographs taken that time.
Right.
But he always wore a dark pinstripe suit. And why did he not look well? And he'd always have a good white shirt and tie on him. He'd be dressed to kill.
This is Derry Gooney Community Centre, where a group of friends of Billy Fox met up to remember him.
He was everybody's man. If a car was about the house, no matter who came in, he would just drive up. You know, if he wasn't up, there wouldn't be long getting him up. He wouldn't be a great man to rise too early at that time either, because he'd wait the whole night.
Yeah.
But if anyone came, there could be 20 cars on the road in a half an hour, and Billy would be above talking to the whole lot of them.
Even as a public representative, he seemed to have a great way with civil servants and people, and he could get work done. But for whatever way he could operate, he could make the success within
Patrick, an hour. The system, Patrick went to the Dáil at that time, and he'd go to the secretaries. Billy wasn't shy talking to women anyway. So if there was a particular area, that it'd be agriculture, no matter what it was, Billy would go to that section, and he'd be sure the first thing he'd do is go to the counter with the girl. Okay. And he wouldn't be long going down the sheet. If Pat Ruxton's name was there and looking for something, he'd turn that sheet. It could be turned back a couple of times before you'd leave.
As the night wore on, the talk turned back to those muted, half-heard stories I remembered from growing up, border stories.
And his family, were they very...
No, it wouldn't be politically minded at all.
No, William or Thompson, no.
No,
they just vote and that'd be it.
That'd be it, yeah.
But then a lot of things happened after that, whether it's worth talking about now or not. You know, different things happened. Billy lost the Protestant vote.
You see, there was a Protestant association in the County of Monaghan. They used to say it was in around between 6,000 and 7,000 votes, Protestant votes.
Because of that CS,
of the,
CS gas canisters that you talked about earlier on in the paper. Because in the election of 65, before Fox decided to go, he had a fair idea that the Protestant Association was going to support him. Now, on the first election, he may have only got a percentage of the vote, but on the second election, he would have got the big percentage of the vote. So they seen more security in voting for Childers, particularly in a troubled situation, you know.
Well, Childers lost the vote that
And particularly, you see, Fox would have got in the 69 election and the 65 elections, Fox even would have picked up a Sinn Féin vote in North Manor. And he actually did.
Yeah.
Protestants, were they afraid of what he was saying?
They were being instructed from the pulpit, you know, this is not within our... vocabulary, in other words, to allow this type of support.
It was
a man
their idea of, at a church.
Running hand in hand along with these boys. But yeah. I think Fox was misled at the time. I think he realised that afterwards. He was set up.
That he was better keeping his head down.
Yeah, and soldier on.
He was nearly too active at that particular time. And
the position about the situation
is
this.
In the fire that he shouldn't have done it.
There was an issue, and that was the kind of Fox. The same as there was, he got himself assassinated because he'd face 10 men if they were standing there. He had no fear in them. You know, and so I know you saw and take that out thing from over your head, like get a look at you. You know, that was the type of character he was. Like, he didn't have any fear in them at all. No fear at all.
Well, he went down one Sunday And he went down to Yacod and started to fill the craters, which shouldn't have been done by anything, you know. He shouldn't have been at that.
Yeah.
Why not? Do you think he should have just kept out
of it? He was a Protestant, you see, and he was elected here and going well, and he was digging with the 2 feet below, you know. He was trying to make them happy and be happy himself.
Trying to keep his constituents happy.
Keep his constituents happy at the same time. But he was still wrongly invited down to do those. His people invited him down to them that he realised afterwards he shouldn't have done.
Well, he obviously felt that that creating the roads was not the answer. Yeah. And
well, there's a lot of farmers inconvenienced along that border line where they had land north and south. And you know, they couldn't move. They were restricted. They were being put. They maybe had to travel 20 miles to get round to feed their stock or look after.
It was an issue regardless of politics.
It was an issue. It was definitely an issue.
He got no Protestant vote, actually, because I know it. I was involved at the time. What was this they called him? It wasn't Black Billy, but the...
Bauxhead
Billy. So he went. I knew a lot of them now and worked with them and got them out to work during that election he was elected. And I know ones, and you know them, Pat, too, that I went to. And they were good friends of mine, but I said, what about Billy? Bogside Billy said, that's all we know. So he got, the girlfriend was, he was going out with that, Marjorie Colson. She came to me that day at the count below in morning, and she said, Patsy, we got one vote. She said, maybe two. That's all the problem. He didn't get half a dozen Protestant votes in that election. I remember an incident, we went in a skiing, and there was a poster up on the road. There's a vacancy for a B specials apply to Billy Fox or someone else. That was on the road, and Billy wanted to take this. As a matter of fact, he did take it.
Remember in the 69 election, Fine Gael took 2 seats in Cavan and 2 in Monaghan, and it was a hard pill to swallow for them to lose the seat here in Monaghan, because it was a stronghold, Fianna Fáil stronghold. That was the situation, and the politics were more bitter. The Civil War politics were still alive.
That's right.
You know, nowadays it's a different story because people are more mature and they're more positive in their thinking, and they're capable of making up their mind. That was the situation at that point in time, and that's why this kind of a slower campaign was carried on, to see if you could discredit the man in any one way. Fianna Fáil tried to tarnish him with another brush. Fox never was in the B specialist. There's no question about that.
Those times, Pat, so you remember, were different things that happened there, and that wasn't right. Like, I mean, Billy Fox was followed several times.
Yeah.
And I remember you talking about him doing something. I was bailing a field of hay one day and broke an axle in the rail. It was only a new bailer. And the only place I could get the part was blowing locks of Porty down.
Yeah.
So I met Billy on the road. He says, get into that car and come with me. But I went a certain distance. I couldn't go any further. I had to go on to locks myself from a certain area. But he wouldn't go into the north at that particular time. People can be foolish by saying things they shouldn't have said. And it creates a bit of friction as well.
But the northern troubles were at their height at
they
the
were
time.
They
were
that,
you
yes.
know, and it was a very difficult time.
It was a very difficult time.
Around the border areas.
It was. As to why he was shot down in the area of the country he was shot in, I just can't understand it.
There was a car tried to stop him from Blaney one night. Probably you remember, and he went on, and I could never understand why he didn't bowl in Carrick. But he went to Carrick and he went to Lohagish, and he went to Ballytrain and round, and he finished up it. There was a sergeant living above Shantana, and he drove the car into the house. You could drive the car in and round the back of the house, but the other car pulled up there and didn't move, because they thought it was only an ordinary house. But when he went into the house, they got the door and the sergeant come out. He stayed there for a good while, and they stayed in the car for a long time. But Billy didn't leave that night till it was near morning. And there were 2 boys in it, and it was an order and care. But them things was happening that in Peggy, wasn't
yes,
it?
A lot of serious activity around the border areas.
Yes.
In the north and south at the time, you know, you're trying to forget about how difficult it and serious it was at the time.
Where were you when you heard he was missing?
We had it on the news that morning at 8 o'clock. Actually, Helen had it. And she called me and said I got up. And I was only up actually with the next door neighbour, which is a Fianna Fáil man. And he was a good friend of Billy's as well. He landed in and Sir Frank was shaking at the time. He said, did you hear about Billy last night? I said, no. He See, the man was shot last night.
We're learning to believe in recent times that there were 7 bullets in him. And some of them never were identified. That's what guns to come out of. It's a strange situation. 35 years later, like they say, that they weren't fit to identify.
Mm. I was hell of a shock, that, and desperate shock.
Wasn't
that.
Right.
Took a wee while for it to settle down, now I'll tell you that.
Cratered roads, a body riddled by 7 bullets, rumours about B-specials, vehicles followed, army checkpoints, a labyrinth of roads leading nowhere. Your car caught in an arc of light from a British Army helicopter on an unapproved road, eyes framed in the rear view mirror, lost.
Just get out here and ask.
Those of us who grew up on this border have a different sense of geography. Things slide into each other. Thinking you're in the north, you're in the south. Whatever you say, say nothing. Whatever you say.
How are you doing? I'm looking for George Coulson's house.
Oh, yes, obviously.
Yeah. Right hand side, yeah. This is Peter Woods. This is George.
Hello. How are you doing, George?
This is the Coulson House in Tyrconey, the house Billy Fox came to on the 11th of March, 1974.
Actually, the mobile home would have been just sitting along here. There was a little pad in straight from the laneway there to it. It's just about this length away from the laneway, and there was another gateway over there as well. And the other house was just over around the corner here. See the whitewashed shed there?
Aye.
And you see the higher gable the other side?
Yes.
It was just sitting in between there.
And what way did he try to get away?
He went on, he stopped over there and he ran along here and tried to get into where the house was, and then he ran over and turned to his left and straight down the fields there, and then turned to his right again, and we're down the fields. That's where we found him.
And there's nothing left of the house or
anything? Nothing, absolutely nothing. There was nothing, only the bare walls of it left. That's all was left. It was burned completely. Nothing, only the shell.
It's always when you go to a place like this, it's a lovely place. And everything, just when you think of what could happen in
a
place.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, out in the quiet countryside. But it would have left a lot of the community very afraid at the time, you know, because they thought, some of them thought they were next. Well, as I say, I think that was the reason, was to put a bit of fear into the Protestant community in the area.
It was well known that Billy Fox visited this house on Mondays when his girlfriend, Marjorie Coulson, had a day off from her job in Belfast. 13 men came to this house that night. 5 of them were charged and sentenced to life imprisonment. They said that they had received a tip-off, a rumour, that George Coulson was a quartermaster for the UVF. They have since been released under the Good Friday Agreement. We had already asked to speak to them.
Is that your father over there?
That's my father there.
A great face, hadn't he?
Yeah. He lived till he was within about a week 94 years of age. So he did. I was just sick for a week. He went into hospital on a Saturday and he died the following Saturday night.
He had a great life, apparently.
He had a great
that,
life, yeah. He had a great life and was very, very active. You know, he was always knocking about around the farm, just keeping an eye on what was going on, you know. Like, he got it hard to handle it too, like that there was neighbours involved. Like, people like that he'd have grew up with, more or less. So the way. I'd say the 70s was the worst decade of any in the Troubles, nearly. And the very early 80s. So there would hardly been a household in the country but they would have lost a friend or a relation or somebody, an in-law, or indirectly. There was nights when we were living in the mobile home and there was explosions and actually the sides of the mobile home would go in and out. So they would. Like along the whole border area there. Like, and it was just, you had to learn to live with it. It was day-to-day thing going on. Which then it transpired afterwards. There was a big dump of arms found over the hill here in McCluskey's Mill. So there was... And then neighbours could tell us afterwards they could hear them practising in the evenings there. Like, we wouldn't have heard it here because of the big hill in between you here. But there was a neighbour man down the road there, he's dead and gone, to Fred Moore. He said they used to start the tractor up in the evenings and get a chainsaw going. And the next thing you could hear the banging going on. Now, funny, one night before... It must have been a week or 10 days before it happened. We were lying in the mobile home and Audrey noticed the latch on the door going down. And I was lying sleeping and she wakened me. She says, "George, there's somebody at the door." I says, "Not at all." She says, "There is. The latch on the door went down." And of course, I ran out, but there was nobody there. But there was somebody trying the door. She must have been, she'd been, the chair she was sitting in, she'd have been here, and she'd have been facing the door of the mobile home, the front door of it. But like, the Gardaí knew that night it was somebody who was well used to a mobile home because there was no attempt made, you know, to open the door in the way. The door just opened out the way like a shot and they were in, standing in the middle of the room before you could blink. Telephone wires were cut on the lane and all too. There was a pole up the lane there and they were cut. Of course, at that time there were no mobile phones or anything either.
It was a big operation.
It wasn't just scrambled together just in a half an hour now. It was well enough planned. Some of them admitted in evidence that they met on the top of the hill. They all gathered on the top of the hill there beforehand. It just, I like that, just wrecks your life. So it does. Like, after you were afraid to go out of the house or anything nearly for a long, long time after it. So you were. But then you see, Billy, when the Troubles started, Billy got involved with sort of both sides trying to mediate. The time they dug the border roads here and all, you know, there was a lot of aggro and all going on, and so they were rioting and all, and he used to go and try and make the peace and try and keep them, the things separated. That is what I couldn't understand, like, that the murder of him in the end, like, he would have been with some of them down at Affin at different times where they were rioting at the filling in of the craters in the road. Like, and they would have known him that night. There wouldn't have been a doubt about it. So there would.
And what happened that night?
My wife and myself were sitting in the mobile home just on the stand of this house here. I was lying on a couch, we were watching television. And the next thing, they burst in through the door of it. And put me down on the ground on my mouth and nose and cut the flex off a heater and tied me hands behind me back. They came in and they said, "Where's all these arms?" And I says, "What arms are you looking for?" "Oh, you've arms here." I says, "There is. There's a single shot rifle there at the back of the door." And one of them went and looked at it. He says, "A fat lot of good that is." He says, "There's a shotgun over in my father's house." But it's more or less nearly an antique. So it was. And then took me over to the father and mother's house. Left somebody with Audrey in the mobile home. They were all armed and took me over with a gun stuck in at the back of my ear. Can you have a bye walking and a revolver stuck at the back of your ear and it cocked? Because I heard him cocking it. I even told him to... The lane was all potholes. I told him to watch when he was walking along the lane because I knew you could... His hand was going, like he was nervous too. I told him to watch where he was walking.
But his hand was shaking.
Yeah. But it's something now you never forget. And like I wondered, would I hear the bang? Or took me over to the house and then they ransacked the house. They were there for quite a while and then the next thing we heard a shot being fired. And there was panic in the house at that stage and they all ran out of the house. But no one, afterwards, like, we knew that was Billy coming, and some of them had, Billy, they'd stopped him on the laneway there, just to the corner of the lane where you came in there to the front of the house. And he got out of the car and ran. And they fired a shot over his head or something, and then he went to come into the dwelling house over my father and mother's house. And, of course, he met them all on the doorstep. And he ran again. Now, he hadn't a clue where he was going because he wouldn't have been familiar with our territory here because, like, any time he was here, like, it'd have been after dark. He wasn't an early bird when he came courting now. But he ran and he got quite a distance away, but they all followed him and shot him. He would have been a good quarter of a mile away from the house, way out across the fields. Of course, he wasn't found till about 11 o'clock the next day. And then, of course, they came back and they burned the houses, the dwelling house and the mobile home, left us with not a thing. Some of us were even in our bare feet. Not a stitch. It's just something you never forget. It's just sort of wrecked our lives. Audrey's health broke down after it. And she had a very big operation. She was in hospital in 1975, 76 and developed colitis. And then went on, stabilised for a while. And then in 1986, she had to go and have her bowel removed in Dublin, and then that she had great relief for a few years then after that, and then she developed breast cancer there back, and she died in 03. And I'd say the whole thing contributed quite a bit to her death, with the anxiety, you know, and everything. Like, they told her they were going to shoot me. So they did.
She was still
in the mobile home. And then they took her over and the two children and put us all into the room. And one of them started rummaging. There was a press up at the side of the fireplace, and they started rummaging through that, and one of them came at the family Bible, pulled it out and looked at it, and he just, there was an open fire, good fire going in the room, and he just landed it in on the top of the fire. Like, we all thought at that stage, well, this is it, when you see that happening.
And what about, it was the next day when the body was found. You must have known that night.
We did. We knew that night that he must have been lying injured. We were hoping he would have been lying injured somewhere, maybe. We hadn't a clue where he was or anything. Not a notion. It was, I think it was about 11 o'clock the next day when he was found. I remember I was brought down to identify the body. So I was. Something you'll never forget now. You were shot in the chest and in the foot. They couldn't really establish, I think, in the post-mortem, which was forced. But some of the Gardaí reckon some of them stood over him. They were shot in the foot, and some of them stood over him and shot him on the ground. But they dug the ground and riddled it, and they never found the bullet. So they didn't. The one thing we found very hard to handle, that it was neighbours was involved. That's what leaves it, like neighbours, and like I used to do work for them with a tractor even at that stage. I had a bowl here, and they used to come to get the cows served for the bowl. So like, when you can do that to your neighbours, you could do anything.
For nothing.
For nothing.
For a shotgun and a single shot rifle.
Yeah, that's right. And if they didn't even take them, they were left there. They were born, actually.
And did any of them over the years ever come back to you?
No. Oh, do you see them about the town there? There's a few of them about Clonus there all the time. You didn't interview any of them at all, did you, yet?
No, we won't. Not yet. We wanted to talk to you first. Mm-hmm. But we probably will go looking for some of them, all right.
Probably will. Why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you?
And did he say that it happened kind of accidentally in the beginning, that he took the helmet or the balaclava of one of them and recognised his face, or at least said he did?
George didn't say that because he said...
The following day, we went back to Paddy McElroy and Paddy Boyle, two of those who were in the community centre earlier. 32 years after the murder, they still had unanswered questions. We had been in telephone contact with one of the five men.
Well, that rumour was rife, like from the word go, that we understood it to be that way, but as you say, there was no evidence.
No.
I'm not sure where that, but like...
But that was said at the time.
That was said at the time.
I might well believe it was said.
We were always led to believe that it was just an accident that he happened to be there on the night. But George was reading if it would be more organised type of thing.
With his reading of it would be more that the fact that they had 13 people, and he says, like, after they said they didn't mean to kill him. And while I think he can accept that they didn't mean to kill him, he said, why were they carrying guns if they didn't mean to use them? They told him they were going to kill him, and they told his wife they were going to kill him. I think his feeling is that it just didn't happen, that those fellas happened to get together on that night, as is sometimes thought,
and decided we'll go up to Coulson's. They have guns there. The roads were scouted out. They believed that they did it at coming up to 10 o'clock because they knew that the guards were changing shifts in Clonus at the time. They went to both places at the same time and they knew that the caravan, that the mobile home he was in, that the door didn't open in like most doors do. It opened out, so they were straight into the place.
Was he of the opinion that if he had to be found that night that he might have survived?
No, I don't think so. He thinks that they weren't sure whether he was shot in the foot or the chest first. But there was a massive blood loss from the chest wound because they said the foot, whatever happened in his, in the shot in his foot, he didn't bleed much from because he was losing blood so heavily from his chest. He thinks that it happened originally, as I was saying, as a message to Protestants to keep your heads down. And then it got out of hand and Billy got killed. But he said his mother didn't think that. His mother always thought it was always about getting Billy and not about the Coulsons at all. But then when something that's that big happened to you, you're going to be thinking about it. They lost their home, they lost their... His wife's health was never the same after it. He had two small children. He had a mother and father as well, and the farm there, and his sister, and Billy dead. So,
it was a terrible tragedy for them. On a small farm, and he was only living in a mobile home or a caravan after getting married. Shortly before that. The night that our AGM at the, what did you call your man? He was next garda.
Yeah, yeah.
He told us that night that there was 9 bullets taken out of Billy's body. Nobody said at the school.
Yeah.
But we never knew of that now. We always knew that he was shot in the foot or the heel or someplace, crossing the gate somewhere.
Lost a lot of blood.
And then the lungs was the fatal shot. He was a guard in Carrickmacross for years, wasn't he? Or where was he?
Blaney.
Yes.
Blaney.
What about the stories the boys were saying down at the community centre that night about him being afraid to go across the border?
I never heard very much about that. No.
Well, he didn't cross the border quite frequently, you know, and brought in lorries from Belfast and that, you know, there might have been at a stage or some kind of threat, you know, but it wasn't a big issue, no. Certainly they're not that I'm aware of.
Patsy Duffy brought up that night and about the two fellas following him and that he drove into the Garda's private residence to escape them. Now, whether that's only rumour or what it is, we don't know. Well, the other aspect of that would be that you kept clear, you didn't get involved.
Because the Northern Troubles were at their height at the time, you know, and the tension was fairly high along the border during those, all through the 70s.
Like I operated along that whole border line from Hackball's Cross down to Clontibret and on down to Muybridge and over the years down Clochers, Knockatallan country. But you'd never, you wouldn't you wouldn't talk about smuggling or making pot, you know, anything. You minded your own business. As a fellow said to me one time, I was way back in the start of the troubles over at it's only about a half mile from Crossmead Lynn. When you cross the Dundalk Road there at Marnikill Cross, a fellow named McCabe. He says, you see nothing, you hear nothing, or you know nothing.
The five men who were convicted of killing Billy Fox wouldn't talk to us.
The five men who were convicted of the murder were members of the Provisional IRA. They have never spoken about what happened that night beyond an unsworn statement entered at their trial. Sean Kinsella, speaking on behalf of the men, said they profoundly regretted the killing. Neither he nor any of his co-accused had discharged a firearm. He did not know the identity of the men who had killed the senator. The identity of those men, the other eight men who were there, is still a secret. Beyond that, much of what happened that night remains a mystery.
Things slide into each other. There is a geography of language, chasms between words. A sentence can hide a mountain.
We return to tell George Coulson the men wouldn't talk.
But I don't think any of them has been very forthcoming about anything like that. Like,
I wouldn't say so.
They'd kind of want it forgotten, I think.
Yeah, it probably would. You see, they'd still be sort of out on license, wouldn't they? Mm. Those guys are all sort of out on license. If they got aggressive or anything, they would be go back in again. But, like, it wrecked their lives too, like, when you look at it. Young lives. Like anybody that has to go in for 10, 15 years, like it's a big spell out of their life too. So it is. Like I can't understand young lads getting involved like that when there is that risk. Because life's very sweet. So it is.
But you know, when you're that age, it's when you look back that when you're in your 20s or in your teens and you're looking forward, it doesn't seem like that to people, I suppose.
Well, I don't know. I never looked at it that way that they would have looked at it anyway. Probably had too hard to walk at home and there was no time for anything else. Somebody asked me there recently about it, had any interest in football. I said none whatsoever, right, because I never played football because there was always work to be done at home. When you come home from national school, there was so much work to be done on the farm, and that was it. There was no time to run about playing football. It's just one of those things that shouldn't have happened now. Like, because like he was such a great man for his country, Billy. So he was. Like, there's no knowing like where he would have reached in politics, like if he had been allowed to live his life. And he had a great way with people, so he had.
Because it is what you said to us before as well, like, because of you can have those rumours about somebody, but if they had looked at your life and the way you worked.
All they had to do was watch you, and they would know rightly that you weren't involved in anything. At the time. But then the people that's involved in anything like that, they don't work.
I think what he said at the trial is probably true, that they were in the house with you, that they were the ones who were in the house that night.
Yeah. There would have been, but then you see they all left the house. Every one of them left the house for quite a considerable time, and then they came back again, and then they decided to burn the house. If you could really get the answers, like why, like it leaves that very big wide open space there. why us? Like, we had a good relationship with all our Catholic neighbours, friends. Like, why did they pick on us? That's the one big question. Like, I could understand, like, if I had been involved in anything. But, like, when you know in your heart that you weren't involved in anything, like, this is why you can ask that question. Why me? Or why us? If Audrey had been alive now, the two of us would have been better able to handle it, you know. But when she's gone now, you feel so alone. Like, there's nobody else in the family here now. Well, Marjorie was here that night, but the children, but then they don't remember anything at all about it. Which is all the better. Their part. You can close it out of your mind, all right, but it'll come back to you. It'll keep coming back to you. Bad memories always come back to you at some stage or another, don't they? Time is a great healer, all right, and you can deal with it better as time goes on. But you still think of it all the time too.
We have forgotten, though. Forgotten where events like that raid on a Protestant farm close to the border might well have led. Everything's folded away, like that paper that lay in the bottom of my mother's wardrobe for years. But George Coulson doesn't have that choice. One of the things he said to us was that while memory faded, the essential truth remained. For him, truth is something elemental.
Nice to talk to you. Good night.
But the real truth of what happened that night is known only to the men who won't talk, and the 8 men who were there and who were never charged. It was well known that Fox visited the Coulson house on Mondays. So why was Monday chosen for the raid? Was Fox a victim of something that started out as a warning to Protestants and went too far? Or did Billy Fox die because he was Billy Fox?
I knew that.
What else would there be?
Nothing else.
Nothing else.
We're away 20 years from this part of the country anyway. We're living in Carrick now.
He used to come up to us and he'll come here and he'll come there, and so wherever you were at, you'd go along with him.
The only thing that I'd be disappointed in is Billy Fox's memory being lost. You know, even within Fine Gael. And of course, I suppose it's a passage of time, maybe. But it's a pity that, I suppose, the fact of maybe having no family or no relations was part of it too. See, the father and mother was dead before Billy died, and then there was no one left, only an uncle, and he died shortly after. So the Fox name was wiped out completely from Vaughan.
Here we go.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night, Pat.